Legend and Amanda are the founders of 300 Letters, an organization focused on creating and maintaining the bond between recently released parents from incarceration and their children. This organization aims to provide support and resources for families as they recover and work to create stability after incarceration. Amanda and Legend were incarcerated together during the most challenging time in their lives, leaving behind their oldest son, Dorian, and soon thereafter learning that a new baby was on the way, just 1 month into Amanda's incarceration. A family forcefully split and getting larger fueled this young couple to ensure that they stick together through the letters that they wrote. The aftermath of their experience has inspired a passion-driven mission in them both to help support families who are working through a similarly challenging circumstance. This interview is incredibly eye-opening, informative, emotionally raw, and inspiring. Let's take a listen as Legend and Amanda share with us their story and their mission to make an impact. Okay, so I have with us here today Amanda and Legend from 300 Letters. How are you guys?
Hey, Christy.
What's up? We are doing great. How are you doing yourself?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm very, very excited to share with my listeners about the work that you guys are doing with 300 Letters. So let's jump into it. 300 Letters is a movement focused on creating and maintaining the bond between recently released parents from incarceration and their children. You say that you wish to help these families recover from the trauma of incarceration together and prove that they shouldn't be defined by their experience, but rather by the way they managed it. Can you tell us more about your own story and what inspired you to create this movement?
Absolutely. So
it all started on ladies' night.
Do tell.
It's actually the truth. But we met, what, maybe 2011, I think?
2012. Yeah.
And we just hit it off right from the back, me and Amanda. And I don't know. It was really fast. We just really got into it. She was a single mother at the time. I was a young guy mixed up in crazy stuff. And
a college student.
And a college student. And eventually, like, we just we got into some trouble. We made some bad decisions. You know, we came from, you know, really hard times, I guess.
Yeah.
Being younger. And it landed us in doing prison time, you know, trying to make a way. It didn't work out that way. So we made some bad decisions. And how would you say that turned out?
So, I think life just happened, and life, you know, unexpected things and decisions that you don't know when you're young that can impact you so deeply. Like you're kind of naive, you know, and you're making money or you're in school and you're like, you have your career and things are just going, you're not aware of like certain little decisions, how they can ultimately impact you and your loved ones. Mm-hmm. So, like you said, we got into trouble, 3 weeks into my incarceration, I found out I was pregnant with our second son, Little Legend. Yeah. So it was intense. It was a very emotional time being incarcerated and being a mom, having to leave my oldest son, having to leave each other, and then like grow my second son. It was very, 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 very stressful. To say the very least.
So here we are, you know, taken away from our families. We're on the same camp.
Yeah. So the federal prisons are divided.
The same federal institution.
Yeah.
And she's on the woman's side. I'm on the man's side, but we couldn't talk at all. We literally had to write letters to each other, and I would send the letter to my mom would send it to her, and vice versa. And we would get like the letters like a week behind or 2 weeks behind. And this is the way that we just kept communication with each other, is how we uplifted each other. And that's what helped us keep our trust, our strength, and our hope through our whole incarceration. So, you know, flash forward, 2.5 years, we come home and we're like, wow, like we really need to make something that can help empower people who are going through what we went through, because we feel like we're just regular people. Like we just made some bad decisions, and you know, now we come back home and we have a life to live. We have kids to raise, you know, like, so we needed to have that confidence and to push forward. And we feel like it's a community out there of people who don't realize like how many of us there are. Like, it's not, this is the US. We have like the largest
incarceration rate in the world.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
So we can't keep like outcasting ourselves and putting ourselves down. We wanted to like create a community where we could uplift one another.
Yeah. So when we got home, we felt that, well, I experienced it myself coming home before he did, being a single mom. And then like everything was only focused on, you know, paying whatever fees in the halfway house, employment, things like that. Whereas to like, I'm a woman, I'm a mother, I'm still me, I'm still Amanda Santiago. Like that's how I felt. And they can't like, I still have my, like, I was facing so many emotional barriers and couldn't deal with like the reality, the harsh reality that I was now labeled a felon. And if you look up the word felon, it means evil person. I'm like, I am not an evil person. One experience does not define my character. Like we made a mistake. We paid our dues. You trust us to come back into society, move forward. But now we have to live under this huge felon umbrella. Mm-hmm. So at that point, you know, getting back into the cycle of work and being a mom and being a wife, it was hard. It was hard, like knowing that I was now labeled this, like everything I did, it kind of like it impaired me. Like, am I able to do this? Should I apply for this job? Should we try to apply for this home? And that's when, like, after years of struggling with that and not being able to talk about our experience, I was like, you know what? We need to build something. We would talk about it all the time. Like, we didn't know how to address it and how to tackle it, but we would say, like, we need to like, there's parents like us that truly care about their children, that love their children, that are not bad people, that care about their families and being bigger than one experience. We have a million experiences in a day. So one experience doesn't make me, you know, doesn't make define who I am. So we would talk about it all the time. And that's when I was like, you know what? There's such a lack of any resources, any organizations helping parents, like just now address those barriers that they face with their children, emotional barriers, you know, being able to tell them about that experience, being able to uplift each other. And that's how it started. That's how it started, like everyday conversations.
Yeah.
Everyday conversations.
Little
about,
by little.
Yeah.
And, just,
and like rereading our letters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it just turned into 300 letters.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So that story in and of itself is like powerful. No, it's powerful. And I really appreciate you guys, you know, your vulnerability and your honesty and your willingness to really put your story out there, because when you do that is when you're able to really show up for a huge community of people, like you're saying, that exist, that feel unseen, unheard, unsupported. Mm-hmm. And it isn't fair that that's the case. You know, it's not, I love that your whole approach is to be so raw about your own emotional experience, that wasn't fair, that you served your time, you made a mistake and you served your time and you did what you needed to do, but then you're left under this felon umbrella, like you said, with such a negative connotation that stunts you from moving forward. So I really commend you guys for what you're doing right now, because it's powerful work, not just for yourselves, but for this community you're working to serve. So let's talk about the main problem you're working to solve. 5.7 million U.S. children have experienced parental incarceration, which is equal to 1 in 12 children. Can you tell us more about the other statistics you've found, and how do you decide where to start and what to tackle first?
So the biggest thing is that when we created 300 Letters, our biggest focus is to prevent these children from ultimately ending up in prison. Children of incarcerated parents are six times more likely to be incarcerated themselves just because of their family, just because their parents were. And there are no statistics showing how kids that have both parents, like our children that had both parents incarcerated, how it affects them. So there's no statistics on that. There's no statistics on how their mental health is affected. There's still, like, everything just says unmet health care needs, you know, unmet, no data available. So I was like, why is no one, you know, what's going on? How, like, we need to prevent generational incarceration. Like, we experience incarceration, but my children will not. Mm-hmm. And that's...
Well, we came up with the 300 Letters Healing Hearts Program, which is our main mission is to give family therapy to parents that are recently released and their families. Because imagine, this wasn't our case, but imagine someone who leaves for 5 years, maybe leaves I don't know, a 9-year-old girl, and you come home to a 14-year-old almost woman, like, you know, that's a lot of changes that happen right there. It's a ton of issues that happen. Kids go through abandonment issues.
Yeah.
Of course, the behavior adults go issues. Through incarceration yeah. issues. So these are things that we felt like had to be addressed, the mental health aspect of coming back home and getting back into society. So what we wanted to do was give these people mental health and also give them child care assistance so that they could focus on, you know, one less financial stress. Felons get paid. I don't know what's the percentage. She knows them all. But felons get paid.
Felons get paid significantly under minimum.
Significantly amount less than, you know, other people. And so that way we wanted to help relieve that financial stress and also address the mental health aspect and get people back functioning in the correct way.
Yeah. So like the whole point of our program is, you know, when people come back home, that first year, they are already at a 75% disadvantage of even finding employment the first year. So they expect them to find employment. They're not eligible for any healthcare, state benefits. So healthcare, food stamps, already as if you're a felon, you're not eligible for this. They take that away from you. So then you have here in Florida, childcare is around $8,000 a year. So a person making minimum wage is not going to be able to afford childcare assistance, the childcare period for their children. It's super expensive. And then focus on getting a job. Like it's just so much. So we felt like if we could give them a head start into healing alongside their loved ones, connecting, you know, identifying the needs that they both went through, identifying the pain that they both went through, and healing together, and they're doing their therapy together and receiving the benefit of child care assistance, that would give them like the push that they need and the community that they need in order to really excel internally and in society.
Wow, that's fantastic. I think it's really just amazing that you guys have taken your own struggle and turned it into something that's so action oriented and really going to help people. Yeah. So I want to talk about a kind of coming back to what we were just talking about, that social stigma of the felony record. Can you tell us more about your own experience with that and how you hope to help others, you know, cope with that?
Yeah, I love that you said that the Healing Hearts program was action orientated, because we began with just the idea of trying to uplift people and like something that was like a confidence building community, you know. So we had the idea of, well, let's start a blog and like let's make these shirts. So you see the shirts?
I love the shirts.
So we're like, so let's make these shirts and let's sell these shirts and let people not feel bad about you know, the experience they just went through. So like this shirt says fell on, never fell off. You know, like I feel like I'm a person that, yeah, I went to prison and I came back home and I kept grinding out and I fought back and, you know, here I stand type thing, you know? So we wanted to like just spread that kind of energy and that feeling amongst our community. But then we said, let's get more action based and let's make the Healing Hearts program. So that's how all of that came together. But I think the first thing that we have to do is just eliminate that idea that, you know, felons are all murderers and all evil people and rapists and whatever have you. It's like we said, it's a felon umbrella. So, I mean, in my case, I had a drug charge. We both had drug charges. And here we are under this umbrella of being evil people. Not to mention that it's a ton of people who, well, we get incarcerated the most in the U.S. Again, I'll repeat it. So, you know, it's just a ton of people who probably didn't even need to go to jail. Maybe they needed a drug rehab program. Maybe they needed therapy. Maybe they needed something else. But instead, they were labeled a felon. And then when you come home, guess what? You're still a felon. That never leaves your record. So you got people paying for it 20 years later, 30 years later, and still being labeled, you know?
Yeah.
So that's really what we wanted to approach.
Yeah. And there's more people actually that sit in prison with undiagnosed mental health issues and substance use disorders, but it's easier to put them in prison than it is to give them rehabilitation and help and other programs. So there's actually so much on that too. But the way that we were like, okay, we have to show that we are not, you know, just this one event, you know, just like I said before. And so our biggest thing that we wanted to do also, like on our website, was to create a blog where people can communicate and share resources to help break that stigma. So people like that are looking for jobs and, you know, want help looking for second chance friendly places, they can all communicate. We can all communicate with each other and give our experience, our lived experience. And that way just create like that strong community.
Yeah, people just going through a rough week and they need some reassuring words. Like you go somewhere and hear other people going through it because, you know, believe it or not, it's a lot of us, a lot more than people think. So.
Yeah. It's such a great resource that you're offering. And I love that energy that you're talking about creating for people. Like you said, there's so many people that are in this position and it's incredibly unfair that, you know, they have to live with that umbrella, as you say, of being labeled as an evil person. I think it's incredibly unfair and it's great what you guys are doing. So you say that there are not sufficient enough studies, you said this already, to show that these children are being impacted on an emotional and behavioral level. But what would you say are the greatest burdens that children of incarcerated parents are struggling with?
Well, there's a lot. There's a lot of burdens. Yeah, I mean, a lot of children live with their parents. Majority of children live with their parents before their parents are incarcerated. Our children lived with us. My son lives with me always. So that's a huge burden. You know, they have to transition into living with other family members. When a mom goes to prison, the child ultimately ends up like floating homes. Like they don't always stay with their dad. When a dad goes to prison, most likely the mom stays with the child. But when both parents go to prison, it's like, that's a huge burden for family members, for grandparents. It's like very unstable. So these children are going through instability. You know, your parents are the people that love you the most in the world. So they're lacking that love, that attention, that understanding. They don't know how to identify the things that they feel. And of course, children, I mean, it's such a wide range of emotions that they feel and misunderstanding that they don't know how to put their finger on it. They don't know how to say what they feel. So it's a lot.
It's abandonment issues.
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, a lot of the times you hear stories where the parents don't even really want to tell the kids where they are. Like, oh, I'm in, you know, somewhere else. And so like the kids are like, why am I by myself, you know, going through all these
and
things?
This is something we were talking about yesterday too, with the psychologist, you know, because a lot of times parents are incarcerated and they'll think, well, I'm just not going to talk to my kids until I get home. And they don't know the pain that they're putting that child through, because your children don't care where you are. Your children want that love, that connection with you all the time. So there's just so much that the kids go through, and there's not enough, you know, there's not enough being done about it, about that. So, I don't know. I just feel like,
it's a ton of things that
I
that's say. Part of your mission now is to try and like fill in those gaps and those holes 100%. Of where the support isn't being given. So can you tell us more about how you plan to connect? How do you plan to connect with those who need your support the most?
Well, that's kind of what we're going through right now. We're trying to have an outreach with that community. And so we've started with like halfway houses and like, these are the houses that people come to when they first get released from prison. So you have like 6 months or so to try to get back on your feet. So we're starting outreach. We're there. We've been building relationships with all the local nonprofits who are in the same lines of work as us. We have a relationship with DCF and a bunch of other organizations that are going to help us get leads. But I think the most helpful thing is just going to be our presence. You know, online, like, so this is going to be a great help. Thank you so much for having us. But we think that, you know, we if we could get our name associated enough with incarceration so that people know, hey, I got, you know, any type of issue with incarceration, I know who to look for. Let me ask 300 letters, you know, they'll know what to do. So that's what we're really trying to do as far as branding. Like, we want people to know that we'll be the place that you can find that help that you need, whatever it is.
Yeah,
like, even if it's not like being in a part of our program, we'll know who to send you to get the help that you need, you know?
Yeah. And yeah. I do think social media will be huge for you because that just gives you that. And the more that you guys put yourselves out there and your own story, it also gives people that comfort level that you might not have with other nonprofits that, you know, are aligned with what you do, because it's like, they've been in my shoes. They understand where I'm coming from. So you letting your guard down like that is just giving anybody that's, you know, looking for help or support, giving them that okay and that comfort to come in. So
yeah,
you say
all the time.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. So you say that 300 letters is about strength, trust, and hope. It's about turning your pain into power, pulling from your mistakes to build character, and being true to the promises you made yourself and your loved ones. Can you tell us how important you think the aspect of community is to the work that you do, especially when it comes to those who are working to turn their pain into power?
I think the community is going to be everything. That's one thing that we didn't have. We just had each other, you know, so like, good thing that we have enough positive affirmations going on here.
You're the best, baby. But, nobody likes you around.
That's awesome.
That's definitely what we're going to need, though. We need people to know that, you know, there's people out there dealing with what you're dealing with, and it's not the end of the world. You know, it's, you could get kicked down and get back up, you know, so. We need more positive stories. We want people to write to our blog and tell us everything that they've been through, tell us their comeback stories. You know, that's what we need. And that's what we want to put out.
Yeah.
You know,
and people don't even know that like 1 in 3 people have a criminal record. Mm-hmm. And there is this amazing, I believe she's an attorney, and she, Emily Baxter, she went like across the nation and did this huge, outreach. She interviewed doctors, psychologists, she interviewed every, like all types of professions, people on all different career levels. And she asked them like, what's the worst thing you ever did? And would you have ended up in prison? 3 out of 3 people like would have ended up in incarcerated or in trouble if they would have gotten caught with the worst thing that they ever did. So 1 in 3 people's already, you know, has a criminal background. But when you do these surveys and you speak to people, like, what's the worst thing you've ever done? And would it have changed like the path of your life? A lot of people say, yeah, if I would have gotten caught for this, and doctors, if I would have gotten caught for this, when I was in college, I did this, when I wasn't, you know, and it's so many things, but some people get caught and some people don't. And so like when people are coming, you know, re-entering home, like they automatically like lose their sense of self, of who they are. Like they, like we did, like it took me so long to rebuild myself as a mother and like realize that I am worth, you know, everything I want to give myself and my family. And so that's what we want to give back. Like, that's what we want. We want to tell everyone, like, you know, you got this, you got this, you can do it. Whatever you want to do and pursue, you can.
I've got to tell you that to everybody listening or watching, like, I can feel the positive energy from you two, like 1,000% through my Zoom screen here.
Aww.
You know, and it's that energy that, you know, your passion for what you're doing, but also just that positive energy behind your intention for what you're doing. I think you guys are going to make a huge impact. In a big way. And on this podcast, we like to talk a lot about compassion. So can you tell us your own definition of compassion and how important or necessary you think compassion is in regard to the work that you guys are trying to do?
I think compassion is everything. I think compassion is having an open heart, an open mind, and, you know, being empathetic, like understanding that everyone's steps are so different. Everyone's journey is so different. And I feel like the people that don't have compassion, they lack, you know, knowledge. And compassion is the essence of what we're doing, really. Mm-hmm. So I think it is everything for everything you do in life, for who you are, you know, for the way that you carry yourself. Like, compassion is essential for our work.
And I'll run with that. I like that.
Yeah, that was a great answer. And I do think that it does. It speaks so well to what you guys are doing, is that like,
yeah.
I like how you just said that it's, if they're lacking compassion, they're lacking knowledge. And I couldn't agree with that more, especially when it comes to this particular topic, because some of the knowledge that you just dropped in this conversation deepened my level of compassion and empathy for anybody that would be in your situation in a way that I, prior to this conversation, didn't have. I did not have that knowledge, you know? Even just as simple as you saying the word felon actually means an evil person, you know? Like, I didn't know that, and I can't even imagine the weight that that bears on everybody who has to live with that stigma. And I love your story about that woman and the work that she did, because who can't relate to the fact that we all made mistakes in our lives, right? Mm-hmm. Something that in your past you may have thought was simple or stupid or whatever, but you got away with it. Mm-hmm. You know, you didn't get caught, and that's the difference that, you know, but here you are having to carry the burden of this stigma for something so similar to what many of us have experienced, especially in our younger years. So yes. Compassion. Yeah. You, and I mean, like, I just think that adds so much more power to your story, because it is so relatable, and who can't relate to having had those experiences when they were younger, but look at what all that you guys have had to go through, but now all that you're going to do for so many other people.
Yes.
Because of it.
Let's go. Yep, let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Love it. So how can people listening donate, you know, where should they donate, and really what will their donations help support?
Okay, so 300letters.org, you'll be able to find everything there. Our first source of donation was these shirts. We started making the shirts, and you could buy
100% of the proceeds go towards our mission.
Exactly. So you could buy a shirt if you want something tangible. We're trying to come up with more merch for you guys too. But you can also just hit the donate button and drop whatever you feel, you know, you can help with. And that's going to go towards paying for the therapy sessions for the program, and also paying for childcare assistance.
So it takes around $1,200 monthly to fund a family for childcare and family therapy. So anything always helps. Like every donation counts. It's so impactful. And we just did a challenge recently, which has allowed us to take on our first family into our program. And everyone was just so amazing and so supportive, and just bringing the awareness. Like, if you can't donate, share our stories, share our website, you know, share our Instagram, like, interact, you know, share a story. If you've had anyone that's been incarcerated, or you yourself, like, tell us about it, because building that strength and that trust within the community is always going to help.
And it's going to be super crucial. So,
That is awesome that you've already reached that, you know, first family. And I hope that you guys reach millions more, because you're doing awesome, incredible, inspiring, powerful work. And thank you so much for being here today. Thank you for sharing with us.
Yes, you're the best.
This is amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Be The Good Podcast. Please like, comment, and share. And be sure to follow us on Instagram at Be The Good Podcast. And remember, we can all find our own way to be the good.